Welcome back to the Extended News at Noon on WISR 680 AM. I'm Tyler Friel with you, and we are continuing on with our coverage of Election 2020, highlighting candidates in local races. And today we will be focusing on the 15th Congressional District, and we are here with the incumbent, and that is G.T. Thompson. He is the Republican from the 15th Congressional District. Congressman, thanks for taking the time, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Tyler, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So we are gearing up for election season. Obviously, I'm sure a very busy time for you. But we've asked this of almost every candidate that we've had on the show. You've been in public life for a while now. Why do you want to go back? You've sought this seat before. Why do you want to go to Washington, D.C. again?
Well, to continue to serve and to continue to make a difference for the families, the businesses within the Pennsylvania 15th Congressional District, which obviously includes a portion of Butler County, includes 14 counties altogether, about 11,000 square miles, 24% of the land mass of Pennsylvania. It really is consistent with my life B.C. before Congress, when I spent 28 years serving individuals facing life-changing disease and disability. It really was trying to do my very best to be able to make a difference in the needs that people have. My service in Congress has allowed me to do that and also do it in a very successful way. When you look at the legislation that I've been able to influence, been able to write, been able to support.
COVID-19 obviously on the minds of a lot of people, and one of the bigger challenges facing the Congress right now, and appears that we're in the midst of a negotiation between the White House and the Speaker of the House. Where is that situation right now, and what are your thoughts on it? Because there does seem to be a very large financial gap between where the White House is and where the Speaker of the House is. How do you view that the COVID-19 relief package should look like if there is to be another one distributed?
Yeah, well, the next COVID-19 relief package really needs to reflect what the actual needs are on the ground. What are the needs? I see needs for education as our schools have returned, bringing kids back into school. Those that are doing the mix of trying to do distance learning, online learning, all of that within this time of a pandemic or a COVID-19 coronavirus comes with extra costs, right? I mean, there's extra cleaning costs, extra equipment that's needed, sometimes extra staffing certainly could have an impact on additional bus routes. And so I think that's incredibly important. Obviously, the making sure that we continue to fund the vaccine development. And I think more importantly, in this stage of the game, because I've been really pleased with how the president and his administration has approached this, to make sure that we are in a position to be able with proper support for the distribution of these vaccines. Because I think we're very close, actually. I'm amazed at the speed of which this was done, not skipping any safety points. When you reflect this back with the polio epidemic, it took a full 10 years to develop a vaccine. And today, I think we're going to see the distribution of this vaccine within the same year that this pandemic just was kind of sprung upon us back in February. And so where is it, the negotiations today? I think it's stuck between Speaker Pelosi and the White House. The Speaker is reluctant to do anything that would appear to lend credibility and success to the president. That's my observation. I know a number of her members, Democratic members, are very frustrated with her because their constituents have the same needs that my constituents have, whether it's education, whether it's health care, their health care concerns, whether it's their economic concerns, whether it's our farmers and ranchers who provide food and fiber for us. And so there's a lot of frustration, I think, with the Speaker at this point, her unwillingness to go with what we can agree upon. And Tyler, my measure of that as I look at the negotiations, I would say that at least 90% is in agreement, both between Republicans and Democrats generally, and across the Capitol, House and Senate. So why not go with what we have that kind of a consensus on?
And that seems to be the frustration when you talk to people on the ground, is that in the first initiation of the coronavirus relief packages, there was quick bipartisan action and the funds got out to the American people. And here they look at part two, some businesses still struggling to recover, some people still in unemployment, and they're wondering, okay, why can't these two sides get together, make the deal, and help the people who need the help?
Yeah, if nothing else, this pandemic has proven that Congress can actually, Washington can act at something other than the speed of bureaucracy. You know, we really did. Back in February, March, April, we were able to do things quickly because we were focused on the needs of the American people. Why has this slowed down? That was the first quarter of the year. Why here in the fourth quarter of the year has things grown to a bureaucracy halt? I think is because politics has slipped into it, and specifically the presidential election, and which is sad. It's sad any time that I see elected officials put policy politics before people, but I really do believe that's what's slowing it down. Now, there is some hope that perhaps we could be called back, and I only need about 5 hours notice. Mm-hmm. I want to stop for coffee when I drive to Washington, and I'll be happy to be there within 5 hours. But that's all going to depend on how many of Mrs. Pelosi's Democratic members put pressure on her to get some real results done prior to this election.
And that's, you mentioned it there, that Congress can function well, and we saw it earlier this year, but from the outside looking in, again, to a lot of people, is they don't, I mean, Congress doesn't have high approval ratings. Do you think it's a well-functioning body of government right now?
Well, it really comes down to leadership roles. And it's interesting that Congress as a whole never has high ratings. And that's to be expected because we have 435 members that make up the body of the House. Congress is actually 535. You throw in an extra 100 different senators. And so the politics of that 535 is very diverse. And so you're not going to find anyone that thinks very highly of it because of the mixture. The fact is, though, that most constituents, most people have high regards for their individual member, but very low regards for the body of Congress as a whole. And I don't think it helps the ratings of Congress when you see the politics being played at this point in time, all to try to influence the presidential election by the Speaker. I think people are, especially in a time of crisis, when people are hurting so much, because some people have not been able to go back to work. And that's largely the result of just 50 people in this country, and it's not President Trump, it's the 50 governors who shut down the economy. I mean, you can imagine working in food services today or owning a restaurant or a bar and hoping to be able to make it on 25 or 50% of your actual capacity. I mean, that's an industry that's lucky in a good year to make 1 or 2% margin. And so there are a lot of folks that are hurting right now, and I think there's a lot of frustration with the politics that are blocking actually moving this next package. I will say, from an agriculture perspective, and that's one of my expertise, I'm hoping to make a little history actually in the 117th Congress. I'm hoping to be the first member of Congress from Pennsylvania to be to chair the full House Agriculture Committee. That would be the first time in 202 years. The last time it happened, it was a Federalist. And so I will say that for all of our farmers that are out there, and I know within your listening area, there's a lot, that they have until December 11th to sign up for the second round of the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, or CFAP. And I encourage all the farmers to reach out to their farm service agency today to be able to get signed up for that assistance. This is the second round. Just because you got it the first round, you don't automatically qualify for the second. You got to do the due diligence and sign up.
I do want to talk to you about agriculture. As you mentioned, a lot of your district, that's a major, major industry. And when you're looking down the line, so, I mean, in the immediate future, these farmers are balancing coronavirus, and how that impacts them right now. But when you're looking 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line, what's your view on agriculture in Pennsylvania? Where do you view the areas of growth, and what areas of concern do you think are out there that you would say, hey, we need to get these ideas and policies in place to help fix those issues?
Well, agriculture is our number one industry in Pennsylvania. One out of every seven jobs is directly or indirectly related to agriculture. It's the largest part of our economy. And certainly that holds true for Butler County and all the counties in my congressional district and the areas surrounding it. there's a lot of things that we need to do, obviously. One is to continue to support precision agriculture. You know, agriculture really is about technology, science and technology. And we have great research that shows how that has proven that we can produce more with on fewer acreage. We can provide more output, say pounds of milk that are produced by a single cow, and all that is based on the science and technology of agriculture. A lot of that relies on connectivity. And so one of my goals going into my agriculture leadership is to get that last mile connectivity done. This pandemic has really pointed out how desperately we need to be able to have complete connectivity reliability no matter where you live in rural America, certainly here in Butler County and rural Pennsylvania, because we need to have access to not just precision agriculture, which is so important to agriculture itself, but we need it for healthcare, we need it for education, obviously, we need it for commerce and growing our economy again in rural Pennsylvania. So when it comes to agriculture, that's a big part of it. Certainly, providing our farmers and ranchers tools to be able to deal with some of the very aggressive regulations that can be put forward by a state or even by, quite frankly, past administrations. I had the privilege of chairing the Conservation Forestry Watersheds Subcommittee a few years back. Nutrition, which impacts every citizen, right? I always say that everybody hopefully exercises the tools of agriculture three times a day, knife, fork, or spoon, and getting proper nutrition and making sure that we have access to the nutritional, highest quality, and safest food supply in the world. That is the role of the Agriculture Committee. I chaired the Nutrition Subcommittee actually the past 2 years when I also was the full committee vice chair. And that was in the 115th Congress, actually. And so, those are things that those are all the types of things that we need to be looking at. You know, we need to look at the succession. You know, the average age of farmers in Pennsylvania and across the nation is probably late 50s at this point. We need a new generation of people that are willing to work hard to feed us, to clothe us, to provide us the building materials and the energy resources we need. So how do we help those new and beginning farmers get started and to be successful?
And is there, just here in Butler, we've seen it when I graduated from Butler Senior High School, 550, I think, people were in my graduating class. You know, take it back to my father's graduating class in the 80s, there's over 1,000 people. So we've seen a decline in population here, which, again, could speak a little bit more to having enough people there to help agriculture. What are ways that you can get people not only to get invested into Pennsylvania, but just to come here and live here?
You bet, Tyler. And, my vision as a leader of the Agriculture Committee is twofold. Number one is to restore a robust rural economy. And number two is to grow our population, because you're spot on. We need to do that. And this is a perfect time to be working on it, because many of the studies I read show a migration from urban centers to rural America. Folks that have been securing at home in 500 square foot studio apartments in New York City and different places, they want to get their families to where the air is cleaner, the streets are safer, there's economic opportunity, where we have great jobs, and that's where we live today. We've got all that and so much more to offer. So how do we do that? Well, I circle right back to, we've got the jobs. I know temporarily there's unemployment has bumped back up, but that's because of how the governors have put mandates on businesses. The economic potential and the hunger for economic activity and the creation of jobs is just under the surface there. I lead the nation on a number of things, but one of the things is career and technical education. It was my legislation that President Trump signed on July 30th of 2018 that modernized career and technical education. That is restoring rungs and a ladder of opportunity. So my point is, we've got the jobs. We've got the mechanism for people to become qualified and trained to fill those jobs. Now, we have to look at what else is out there. And one of the things truly is connectivity. With connectivity, you create opportunity, right? And if we do those things in the right way, we can stop exporting our young people, our youngest generation who finish high school and move somewhere else in perhaps a suburban or urban area. And it also is more attractive for people to be able to relocate here that maybe have lived in urban America their entire life, and this pandemic has them looking for something different, a place where there's lower incidence of things like pandemics and greater opportunity. So I do put connectivity on the top of that list. We've been successful with, again, with the job creation. We've been successful creating pathways to that. We certainly have the property available. I am seeing, as I talk with residential realtors, they are busier than ever, that there's quite a demand for homes. I suspect the home builders are experiencing the same thing for new home building construction. So we have an incredible opportunity, but I think we have to be intentional and lean into it and let people know in different parts of the country and the state what a great place a place like Butler County is to be able to live and to raise your children and to have a great life.
I want to talk, and we're here with the current incumbent for the 15th Congressional District, G.T. Thompson, who is seeking re-election. I want to get into a little bit of fiscal policy. It's something that you have on your website, campaign website. $27 trillion in debt, and that's where the United States is. There's a camp of belief that it doesn't matter. There's also a camp of belief that it's extraordinarily important. A lot of Republicans were on that camp for a long time earlier in this decade. And since the president has been in office, it went from $19.9 trillion to $27 trillion in debt. That's a substantial increase for a party that really made and tried to hit home the point of fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, the difference, though, between the Trump administration and the Obama administration, was looking to grow government. The Trump administration, with Congress, we're responding to a pandemic, one that you don't see that often in the history of a country. You can go back to the Spanish flu in the 1910s. You got the polio in the 1940s, 1950s, even the 60s. So that's the difference. And it does blow my mind when I think about just since March, how much spending I have voted to approve. But it's been for the right reasons. Doesn't make it any easier, but quite frankly, it was the right thing to do because we were responding to, first of all, health concerns. And the fact that the number of deaths that we've had in this country now, which is over 200,000, and every one loss of life is just one too many. But that could have been that was predicted to be so exponentially higher at the time of this pandemic struck this country. We're talking about millions. And so I think we did the right things to be able to bend that curve, even though the loss of one life is such a tragedy. And then there's the economic impact that was really imposed by the governor. But quite frankly, we need to get that economic engine refired back up. You know, people needed to be able to buy groceries. They needed to be able to attend to their health care needs. They needed to be able to pay their mortgage. So this debt is still absolutely important to me. And I think it's important to most of my colleagues, quite frankly. And it's not the kind of thing we're going to do one way or the other. You need to be efficient with your spending and knowing that what the outcomes are that you're going to get so that you don't overspend. Are there things that we should always be looking to see what should government do and what should government not do? At the same time, you're never going to cut your way out of that. You're also going to have to. Part of it is obviously it's money spent, but also revenue in. And so that's where we have to refire the economy. Prior to February, you know, the amount of tax dollars that were coming in, even after the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that we passed, was amazing because it was stimulating the economy. Jobs were being created. We had over 7 million jobs that were open and available. Average wages were going up for the first time in decades for individuals benefiting families. We need to refire that economy as well going forward.
Do you think there's, you mentioned trying to, and I think a lot of public officials, both in public health and, you know, governors as well, are trying to thread the needle of public health and economic recovery. It seems like that's been their option. But are consumers going to be confident without a vaccine? Can you get back to full economic recovery? If you were to leave this door right now, it doesn't feel like it would just switch on 100%. Like, there just has to be this threading of the needle here currently that everyone, Republicans and Democratic governors, are trying to get their way through right now.
Well, I agree. I will say some governors have done better than others. There's no doubt about it. When you look around the country in places that where the governors have added, who've approached their work with a culture of caution and courage versus what we've seen here in Pennsylvania, which was administering with a caution of fear, where an administration is not even able to explain what criterion they use for who got a waiver and who did not. Why could you always go to a big box store surrounded by hundreds of people, and yet the mom and pop store that is at the economic backbone of our state and our country was shut down and not allowed to function and operate. And so I do think that that's certainly those are all things that need to be consideration. And I agree with you. I've always estimated that maybe about 30%, a third, 33% of our population will not have the confidence to reengage fully in the economy without a vaccine. And so that's why I think these vaccines are so important. I expect that as a former healthcare provider, I practiced healthcare for 28 years, actually, before I ran for Congress. I'm expecting that we will see sometime here in the beginning of the flu season, which is vastly approaching, we will see vaccines available. I think that will help a lot of people to have the confidence to be able to engage fully in the economy, to go out to eat, to get on an airplane to travel, to get on a bus to travel. Tyler, I think you're spot on. I think that's a very important part of getting that confidence to really getting our economy fully operating on all cylinders going forward.
And we're here with Republican Congressman G.T. Thompson, kind of in that same vein. I think when you're really looking at industries that currently are definitely being impacted right now, and almost everything is, but the restaurant industry and the entertainment industry, we're in the radio industry. We give away concert tickets all the time to let people go see shows. No question, that's been an industry that has been harmed significantly. And again, when people are looking to Congress, maybe they're not all expecting another $1,200 check in their pockets, but they're looking to, hey, my favorite restaurant is struggling right now. I'd like to see the federal government get involved and save them. Or my favorite place to go see a show is struggling right now. They can't open. I'd like to see Congress step in. Do you think there's a role to really target relief efforts at the United States Congress level when they're distributing these next relief packages?
I think there is, and we started that process actually back in March with the CARES package, and we need to continue to work on that. I love working off of data, and quite frankly, too many of my colleagues work off emotion and sometimes myth. I think it's important to have measurable outcomes so we can see where have we been able to make a difference and what is the remaining needs. Absolutely. You talked about the hospitality industry, the entertainment industry. I've got a son, probably bad timing, in May, graduated with a master's degree in theater. There's no theater jobs right now. And our theater industry, our performance industry, is hurting dramatically as a result of that. And some of these, the Paycheck Protection Program had helped. I know what has been proposed in this next package of coronavirus aid would include a second bite at the apple for the Paycheck Protection Program, and perhaps expanding it a bit to some folks, businesses who didn't qualify for one reason or another. I think that's incredibly important. There are also some industries that are that are just obviously are strategic. Airlines is one of them that got some special attention from the Treasury Department. I do think that theater. I'll tell you one that's close to home, Tyler. That's our volunteer fire departments. I mean, we cannot. There's not enough tax dollars, and I'm an old firefighter. I'm state certified firefighter one, EMT, and rescue technician. President of my company for like over 20 years, and so I get it. And the main revenue for these fire departments have not operated. You can't do dinners. You can't do catering. People aren't doing public events. The raffles, the chicken barbecues. And so so that's something I've been working on because, you know, the alternative is that tax dollars would somehow fund our volunteer fire emergency medical services and rescue companies. Not enough tax dollars out there to do that. So we've got to figure out how we help those organizations to be able to get through this and get to the other side. I do think the vaccines are an important part of that because, once again, we could once those are in place and people, you know, they're not going to be mandated, obviously, but people may choose to participate in that process. As a former healthcare professional, that's something I would do. I have confidence in the science as they're developing them. That would help all the industries that we're talking about, from our volunteer fire departments to, quite frankly, our theaters.
I want to talk to final question for you, or final series of questions. The state of American politics. I think it's easily agreeable that the temperature has been taken up a notch. You know, there does seem to be spirited debates and sometimes more on both sides. Do you think it's healthy where we are right now? Do you think the tribalism that is out there is good for the country?
Yeah, well, that was an understatement that the rhetoric's been taken up a notch. Obviously, it's just plain ugly in a lot of circles and a lot of places. And people have made it personal, and politics isn't personal. I don't believe that, by and large, there's anything as bad people, but there are bad ideas. And so it's okay to disagree. I think that's the beauty of how our government was founded and how it was organized under the Constitution as a republic, so that there was a process so that all representatives, and we're a very diverse nation, and so we have diverse members, can come to the table. But we shouldn't make it personal, and some have embraced that, unfortunately, and they've made it personal, and there's been attacks on people. Whether you're talking about attacking the president's personality, or talking about different members of Congress doing it to each other, I don't think that's acceptable. No, I've always approached it from a problem solver's perspective. This was a philosophy I had long before going to Congress, and that is, I want everybody at the table. You know, I respect the fact that, you know, we don't have many things that we probably agree upon. But the fact is, we can come to the table, and we don't need to spend a lot of time talking about those things we disagree about. Quite frankly, I can just turn on cable news and hear that. But let's come and talk about the things that we can agree upon. And let's use that for a basis for building cost-effective solutions. I did that in my healthcare career. I did that in my community work as a leader. And quite frankly, I've done that now, it's hard to believe, for 12 years as a member of the United States House of Representatives, with great success legislatively as a result of that.
And not surprisingly, the 2020 election geared around the presidential election, President Trump seeking re-election, Vice President Biden seeking election. I don't think there would be any question that President Trump has broken down the norms of the presidency. This is maybe more a broader question. What qualities do you think make a good president? Because he's been cut from a different cloth, even from President George Bush. Do you think the qualities that he has makes him an effective president? What do you look at when you're evaluating what a politician can do in public life? What are some of the characteristics that you look at, and what are some of the personality traits that you look at?
Well, I do. I love working with the president, actually. I do. I wouldn't use the same words or use the same names that he may call certain individuals. That's just not who I am. He is certainly not conventional. There's no doubt about it. But he is effective. And that's what I look for, effectiveness in delivering outcomes. I want somebody that I can trust with what they say, that they're just not telling me what they think I want to hear, that they're actually being sincere with what they say. And then I want to see the actions. I want to see the deliverables. And then those are the outcomes that really make the lives of my constituents better, because those are the things I work towards each and every day. So those are the things that I look for, and those are the things that I enjoy working with the president. I've been with the president in his Oval Office, at the cabinet table, on Air Force One and in Marine One, and many of those times when I'm at the White House, it's been a bipartisan gathering. You know, the president really doesn't care about labels. He just cares about getting things done for the American people, and that's what I want in my leaders. That's what I expect. He puts the politics aside. You know, sometimes he says statements that, you know, that the Republican conference kind of does a step backwards of the things that he talks about that he believes would make the lives of Americans better. And he's open to input, I find. In fact, I routinely, no matter where I'm with him, of those that are around him, he'll take a kind of a census of ideas, of thoughts. He asks each individual, what do you think? You know, and he'll have things that he wants to talk about. So he'll lay that out as an agenda. But he asks your opinion of everyone in the room, whether it's Republican or Democrat or whomever. And then he leaves it open so that if you have something additional outside of what he wanted to talk about, he's willing to listen and to take that input. And those are the kind of qualities I look for in a leader.
He's Congressman G.T. Thompson, seeking re-election to the 15th Congressional District. Congressman, we appreciate you taking the time.
Tyler, thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity.
We'll be back with more election coverage tomorrow. Stick around. You're listening to WISR 680 AM.